Hello, everybody. Just a very quick one about Instagram. If you're on it, Meta, the parent company, is reducing the number of political posts visible to users on their feed. This is a real thing, not a hoax. So go to your Instagram profile, tap the three horizontal lines in the top right corner to open the settings tab, scroll down to what you see, click on content preferences, open political content, and turn on don't limit political content. That's an option. Otherwise, you won't see almost anything we post because we are deemed political. Please do that now, or you won't even see the posts about our shows, our fun things. So if you want to see Guilty Feminist content and know when we're coming to a place near you or releasing a new podcast, do it now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm a feminist, but this week I sent my goddaughter for her birthday a series of costumes, some of which were gender neutral, including a lion, a bee, and a pirate, which I deemed as gender neutral. It said for boys, and I thought, no, I'm not having that.
Yeah.
Outraged,
yeah.
I was. But I was most excited, if I'm completely honest, about the bell dress from Beauty and the Beast. I couldn't wait. And her mother, who's also a feminist, just sent me a picture of herself holding the bell dress up going, oh, I wish it fit me. Ignored the lion costume, the very neutral bit. The only one my goddaughter's interested in is the bee costume because she's Generation Z and they want to save the world and so do bees. So I'm pretty sure she doesn't care about bells. She cares about bees. Now, I should be proud of her. And of course I am. She's only just turned three. Very proud that she loves bees more than princesses because princesses aren't going to save the world. They've been around for ages. They've done nothing towards it.
That's true. They just
actually
support.
That's not true. Princess Diana was always walking through landmines or something. But,
yes.
But bees overall.
This is taking a turn, Deborah.
Bees overall.
Yeah.
Do more. I mean, there are queen bees. Maybe she's just.
Can a bee wear a great like revenge dress? You see, can they? No.
I mean, listen. I think stripes is always a revenge outfit. And if you've got a sting like that, how is it not revenge? How is it not revenge?
Absolutely. Yeah, the poor bees give the ultimate revenge, don't they? They leave half their arse in your arm if you've messed with them a bit.
Yeah. No, yes. I mean, they do well on Tinder. If you don't ghost a bee, it will find you.
If I ever become single again, I'm going to do that. I'm going to leave half my arse in your arm, mate, if you ghost me. I'm a feminist, but I feel weird when I see boobs on a robot, and I don't know why. I don't know why. It doesn't matter what kind of boobs they are. I'm just like, do robots lactate? Do robots lactate?
No,
you're and it
right.
feels so odd. But then again, am I like, is that because of my inbuilt misogyny? Why is that?
Yeah, why is the neutral boobless?
That's true. That's a beautiful, that sounds like a book title, but like I just feel
I'll text my publisher now. Is there anything in this? What I find weird, I was thinking today about the origin and I looked up the origin of the word human and woman, because the root of that, both of those words, seems to be man. So what kind of man? A human. What kind of man? A woman.
Mm-mm.
And I went, oh my God, men are like, they're so centered, even in the words that define us.
Yeah.
We cannot get away from them. And I looked up, woman was originally with man, wife of man. And the F just got lost because, you know, people are lazy when they speak, aren't they? It was probably like some kind of medieval emoticon that fell away. I'm a feminist, but earlier today I said, I hate the internet, and then quickly added, but I'm nothing without it. Nothing. I'm nothing without the internet. I'm nobody and I'm nothing. That's what I said. It slipped out.
I'm genuinely addicted to the internet.
I'm basically a robot with boobs now.
You are. Yes, we all are. We all are. No, like I've taken Twitter off my phone and my thumb keeps hovering like it's a phantom app that's left there. And like I have these thoughts all the time. I'm like, I love the people in Gogglebox, even the people I suspect of being Tory. I wanted to tweet that. Who am I going to say that to? My boyfriend once. Like, I need an outlet for my inane opinions.
Who am I going to say that to? My boyfriend once is the sentence of the age. What would be the point of that? He'd just hear it, enjoy it, and it would be gone. How am I going to get validation from thousands of strangers?
Exactly.
Or discover that actually only three people thought that was worth liking.
Or even get horribly savaged for my opinion. Like, my boyfriend... My boyfriend won't quote tweet me and go, what? Like, you know, so.
It's true. He's not going to come up. He won't troll you for that innocent throwaway comment.
No.
So, yeah, you'd rather be savaged by thousands than heard by nobody, basically, is what we've discovered.
Well, what? My boyfriend isn't nobody. He's one person. But yeah, exactly. I'm a feminist, but I've started adding avocados to smoothies and I feel more like a woman, which is very weird. Like, I feel like sneaking vegetables into my diet is a very matriarchal thing to do to me.
You've snuck vegetables into your own diet, like parents who mash up courgette and put it into beef burgers or something so their children don't know.
Exactly. So I'm trying, I think I've got into this thing now where like I'm role playing with myself, where I'm just tricking myself into eating more vegetables and then remembering about 10 minutes later and go, haha, I'm clever. But yeah, I don't know why that makes me more of a woman, but I felt it did.
It sounds kinky, if I'm completely honest.
You know, when I brought role play into it, it did, didn't it? I should. There were the wrong words.
Sounds like you're dressing up as a nanny for yourself.
I'd love that.
I'm not kink shaming. I'm all for it. And I feel if you can play kink with yourself, then you are a winner.
The only nannies I know wear fleeces, so I've got a fleece. I'll pop it on. Is that your definition of what a nanny is?
No, I was thinking like a Norland nanny, like a Mary Poppins type outfit with a pinafore.
Oh, I was thinking, you know, normal nannies with like a windbreaker or something like that. Something
I was a nanny. I never dressed very glamorously when I was a nanny. It's true.
I wouldn't employ a nanny that was dressed too glamorously. That's my I'm a feminist but.
Oh!
That is my I'm a feminist but.
Do you know there are many women who will not employ a nanny that they believe to be the kind of woman who would be attractive to their husband?
And
that is an I'm a feminist part. And I mean, I was employed left, right, and centre as a nanny. Looking back now, I think that was unflattering.
Oh!
Why were they not thinking I was a threat? I'm a feminist, but I would like to be considered more of a threat by the mothers who hired me.
That's.
I mean. I could have got a job with Sadie Frost, let's be perfectly honest.
Me too, Deborah. We're in that club. I wouldn't be that qualified, but I'd be very available. Like, I'm very flexible time-wise.
Don't say flexible in the interview. Don't say that.
No!
I'm a feminist, but this morning I said when technology was failing me, the Apple TV is a little bitch. To be fair.
It is.
I was trying to get on with my dance teacher and she could hear me and was laughing at me referring to the Apple TV as a little bitch. Do you know what? I don't even feel bad about it. And I know I should. I feel no shame about it. I should feel shame about that.
If your Apple TV had boobs, I think you would feel more ashamed. I think we need to do that.
It's true.
And then we can stop calling our technology little bitches.
It's true. from a variety of bedrooms and kitchens via Zoom. The Spontaneity Shop presents The Guilty Feminist with me, Deborah Frances White, guest co-host Alison Spittle, and our very special guests, Belle Ribeiro-Addy, Gracie Mae Bradley, Patsy Stevenson, Matilda Mallinson, and Grace Petrie, talking about the UK policing bill.
Woo-hoo!
Yeah.
Woo-woo-woo-woo-woo-woo.
This is The Guilty Feminist, the podcast in which we explore our noble goals as 21st century feminists, our hypocrisies and insecurities which undermine them. I'm Deborah Frances White. With me is Alison Spittle, and we're talking about the brand new UK policing bill. Oh, Alison Spittle, how are you?
Oh, what a lovely light subject, Deborah. I'm delighted to hop in at this one.
We only get you in for the truly, for the frivolous.
Yeah.
You know, when I think, who's going to find it easy to make comedy about this subject? That's when I reach for Alison Spittle on my speed dial and go, if anyone can make a joke about this,
yeah,
it's Alison
Spittle. And apologise for it after. It's Alison Spittle. That's me.
On the most serious episode we ever did, Alison Spittle leaned into our guest and said, what does Boris Johnson smell like? I think of him as a Davidoff cool water man.
I stand by that sentiment. I stand by that.
Someone complained I saw online, a very humorless man complained about it. He was outraged. Like, outraged you would ask that.
Did you think Boris was more Calvin Klein? Like, what was his problem?
I think he was an Old Spice man who complained himself.
Cool.
He was an Old Spice man.
Yeah, they do complain. They do complain a lot, Old Spice men. That should be the new word for gammon, is Old Spice men.
Oh, yes.
That's a great one.
He's a bit Old Spice.
Yeah.
But sometimes women are gammon.
That's true. Yeah, feminism.
Hashtag feminism. So, Alison, earlier today, you and I had a briefing with Amnesty International. I'm privileged to be an Amnesty ambassador and therefore extremely privileged to be able to get briefings on human rights issues from experts. And today, you and I had a Zoom with the wonderful Oliver Sprague. Oliver's official title is Program Director of Military Security and Policing at Amnesty International, an organization that defends human rights. And so they're always watching what governments around the world are doing and how they are eroding human rights or contravening human rights, taking advantage of people's human rights and fighting for them. And so Oliver has been in the human rights business, if I can call it that, for decades and knows an awful lot about this stuff.
I tell you, I would love to be in a pub and have a drink with him. I could listen to him for ages.
Like, to be honest, I'd have a drink with Priti Patel at the moment in a pub. So that I don't think that's much of a compliment to Ollie. We haven't been in a pub for a year. I wouldn't have a drink with Priti Patel. That's a lie. That was a hyperbolic. I'd leave a pub. She's not in the pub.
I'd stay in a pub, but I'd give her a dirty look. So that's what I would do.
I don't think she's ever been to the pub. The pub's fun. What does she want with it?
And if she dropped a glass on the floor, I'd be like, way, way. And I'd make her feel really embarrassed about dropping a glass in the pub. That's what I would do. That's my punishment for Priti Patel.
You're a real feminist there.
Yeah.
So Ollie, who was the loveliest man in the world, but also highly educated and brilliant on these things, gave us a briefing. So before we bring our brilliant guests on, I am going to recap what we learned at the Amnesty briefing. If you hear me say anything where you think that's not quite what Ollie said, or there was more to that, or there was something else that you should know, could you please buzz in like this?
Buzz. Thank you. Is that what you like?
And perfect. Add. Yeah. Add or take away. If you're a global listener or you're somebody who has not this week been following the news because it's too depressing and you're in lockdown, the British government is bringing in a bill which is going to bring in lots of draconian measures which will erode our human rights. It's called the Policing Bill because it's specifically a response to recent protests and gives the police more freedom to act in a more aggressive manner to citizens who are protesting. This is the genesis of this bill and certainly the top line of it. The first thing Ollie taught me was that he said in all of his years on planet Earth, this is the one bill the most disparate voices all say this is an abomination. He was like, it's everyone from Friends of the Earth to Ramblers, Black Lives Matter, the National Trust, pro-Brexit campaign,
Whoa.
And the Countryside Alliance, they're people who protest because they want to hunt foxes with more blood and vigour. Everybody doesn't want this. Everybody doesn't want it. Because fundamentally, what it's saying is, if you want to protest, we can stop you doing that if you are being a nuisance or noisy.
That's the whole point. That's the whole point of protest.
That's the definition of a protest, is a noisy nuisance. You're making yourself a noisy nuisance to say, hey, we don't like what you're doing, government. This is a democracy. You work for us. And you are being a noisy nuisance. You cannot have a protest that is not a noisy nuisance. What is that? Sitting in the park.
I mean, the Tory government want like people to do litter picking or something like that as a form of protest. Like, that's ridiculous.
They want us to protest from home by going, I disagree.
They want us tweeting. They want us tweeting and attacking each other and like not bringing it to the streets. And it should be on. Sorry, I'm going to go back to our game that we're playing.
Oh, yes, game.
Instead of my lukewarm takes, but like, you know, that's my feeling.
No, there's going to be plenty of time for your lukewarm takes when we bring the guests on, Alison.
Cool.
And mine.
I'll have
and
them
mine.
In supply.
So some of the people that we would not naturally ally with, even like Tory MPs who are sort of anti-maskers and very, very, very pro-Brexit, they are going, no, hold on a minute. You can't just say we can't say anything anymore. Now, the government would argue, no, we're not saying you can't protest. We're just saying the police need reasonable measures. They need to be able to do X, Y, and Z to control protests in case they get violent. But here's the thing. What Ollie told us today is, and it should be obvious, as soon as he said it, I went, oh, yeah. The police have already got all of those rights at their disposal right now. He was like, under the right circumstances, the police can shoot you dead legally. What more did the police want? He said, have you not seen protests? Police kettling people, police using shields, police using force, police arresting people. They do all of that stuff. He was like, so hold on a minute. What rights do they not have that are covered by this bill? And the thing is, it's not really about that. It's really about opening the door to say, if we don't like the kind of protest you're having, we can then say, you can't have this protest. And he said, like, it's very vague language, like noisy. What does that mean? He said, there's nothing in it saying anything over 60 decibels for 10 minutes. It's just noisy. But who decides what's noisy?
Yeah.
And so he said, if you're protesting against bad guys, arms dealers, they could go, oh, they're being really noisy out the front of our building, take them away. So it opens the door to that. Now, it's going to be used against travellers. And travellers are, he said, the most criminalised, even more criminalised than black men in this country. And that really is saying something. And travellers, there's something in this bill that says travellers can be moved on because anybody can be moved on under the idea of trespassing. And he said that will also be used for sit-ins for students, you know, students in halls doing a sit-in or chaining themselves to something or, you know, Extinction Rebellion, that kind of thing. It's going to be used to say we can just move you on from anywhere. But it, of course, then will be used against marginalised groups. Were you buzzing in?
No, you've said everything so right. I'm like waiting for wrong stuff here. I'm like, this is a game where I'm very much like putting my chest back.
I'm sorry, you haven't had much time to buzz. he also said that all dogs were going to be banned from the United Kingdom.
Buzz!
He didn't say that. He didn't say that. But he said there is something in this bill that some people might say, oh, but this is good in this bill, which is, there's going to be better legal protections for violence against women and girls.
Yes.
But the women's sector is saying, please don't put that in this poisonous bill, which is a death by a thousand cuts to our human rights. We don't want it anywhere near that. We want to have that conversation, but we want women to have their own bill or to be put in a bill that isn't just literally hoovering human rights out of the United Kingdom.
I put it this way. If I'm in a restaurant, I get a bowl of custard and there's a fleck of shit in it, I'm putting it back into the kitchen. Like, I'm not eating around it. I'm not going to be served it. That's how I feel about
bills. You've got notions, Alison Spittle. I've always said it.
I do.
It's fancy with Alison Spittle.
Oh, Alison doesn't like the shit in the custard. La-di-da. Sorry, Deborah, go on.
No. And so the other thing it's going to be used for is knife crime. It's saying, oh, well, we need more powers to make sure people aren't carrying knives. And he said, on the face of that, you might think, well, that's perfectly reasonable. But in fact, they can't. Of course, it's already a crime to carry a knife. They already are stopping knife crime. They already have those things. What they're doing in is sliding things like reasonable grounds to search you, like you've got a criminal record in the past, or other things that will disproportionately mean that black men and women will be stopped and searched. So it's powers to the police we don't want the police having. Also, this bill is trying to take away our right to protest in front of the House of Commons because some MPs have been abused in front of the House of Commons going into work. But there's already laws against abusing anybody. So we don't need this. What it means is the protest that, for example, we worked on with Amica George against period poverty wouldn't have had the same impact because MPs came out of the House of Commons to see what all these young women and teenage girls were protesting about. And lo and behold, guess what? Amica got the law changed because she got those MPs on side. It's not going to happen if we're protesting in Croydon, is it? We need a right to protest out the front of the House of Commons.
Mm-hmm.
What Ollie was saying is the police have already got plenty of power and arguably more power than we would want them to have. So what we don't want is for this bill, which is really there to erode human rights. And so the government, which human rights are pesky, then people can ask for stuff and they're getting in the way of us doing exactly what we want. And so that's what this bill is really about. Do you think I've reflected amnesty properly there?
I really do. I was listening to you and I was like, I feel like I'm doing exams and you've given me great, great notes and grinds. And that I think for the listeners at home, that is what we heard about at the amnesty meeting. And it is such an important bill. And it's so good that we're having this conversation now because sometimes it can feel overwhelming. It feels like the government are constantly up to stuff. And sometimes you just tune it out because they're always at it. And this is how you get apathetic. And I feel that I was apathetic before about a lot of stuff because Tories keep Torying and there's nothing you can do about that. But listening to you now, like, this is such an important bill to stop. And for the listeners at home, like, I'm really privileged to be a part of this conversation. Like, I feel like I'm getting a big education today. So thank you very much, Deborah.
I must reiterate, Amnesty International need to be politically neutral because they have to work with all governments. So, no, you don't
all
have to be,
all views are my own, baby. All views are my own.
You don't have to be politically neutral. In my role as an Amnesty ambassador, it's because they have to work with whoever they have to work with to get the job done. So they can't, of course, it's not their place to be party political. So as an Amnesty ambassador, may I say this is a politically neutral assessment of the situation. Now, that's me. Now, I'm going on a break from being an Amnesty ambassador.
Yeah.
And I'm Deborah Frances White, guilty feminist and comedian. So just to be clear about that, if you're listening at home.
I can say whatever I like. Like, Boris Johnson looks like he's got nits. That's what I would say in my political opinion.
Well,
that's the way I'm voting.
That's not official amnesty policy. Just by that, that's no.
I'll be quiet.
The other thing I didn't say is, and the most important thing, which I wanted to leave to the end, and I left almost to the end so that it wasn't there at all.
Okay,
there's something in this bill. You should have buzzed to say this was the most important thing, Alison. Thank you. There's something in this bill that says ministers can make regulations on things that previously would have had to be made law going through the parliamentary process. So, you know, when Trump in America kept going, oh, I'll just do, what was it called? Presidential.
Oh.
Tom, what's it called that Trump did?
Grace
Sorry.
Was saying that. What were you saying, Grace?
Trump did all sorts of shit.
No, the presidential, you know, he'd say, executive, I want this to happen.
Is it executive order? That's
executive
what
order,
saying.
Thank you.
Grace said that. I did not say that, by the way.
I'm a feminist, but I asked a man rather than any of the women on the Zoom.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. I thought it's not right to ask my guests. I meant to know. So edit that out. Shh. That will be in the blooper there. if this goes to the blooper, Tom, I need to add, Tom did not know the answer to this. Grace Petrie.
Cool.
So, you know how Trump used to bring in executive orders where he'd just go, I don't want to be worried about democracy, so I'm just going to say it and make it happen. They want more freedom to do that. That's extremely dangerous because that's really opening the door to us. All of this is opening the door to us losing what we know of as democracy. And this is part of a wider campaign from this government. There's other bills coming in, which we will discuss in other episodes. Our first guest today is the Labour MP for Streatham, a dedicated feminist, anti-racist and trade unionist who currently sits on the Women and Equalities Committee in Parliament and previously served as Shadow Immigration Minister under Jeremy Corbyn. Prior to this, she worked as Diane Abbott's political advisor and chief of staff. Please welcome Belle Ribeiro-Addy. Woo! Belle is joined by a human rights campaigner and policy expert, currently working as the interim director of Liberty, campaigning for everyone in the UK to be treated fairly with dignity and respect. Please welcome Gracie Mae Bradley.
Woo! Woo! Woo!
Also, on our Zoom, we have a physics student at Royal Holloway University who is their Women in Physics representative. She's an advocate for women's rights and diversity in STEM fields. Please welcome Patsy Stevenson. And finally, a human rights journalist and filmmaker who is also the founder of the Refugee Media Centre. Her work also has been published across many major news outlets, including the No Media, Pioneer Post, the Financial Times, and the Evening Standard. Please welcome Matilda Mallinson. Okay, so let's start with you, Belle. You're a Labour MP. What do you think about this bill?
I think the bill's an absolute disgrace, and it's just yet another long line in this Conservative government's attempts just to consolidate power amongst themselves. They've put forward a whole host of bills in the past year when they should have been focusing on the coronavirus pandemic. Instead, just about everything they've put down is about more power for them, less rights for people, and just not really supporting people in the way that they should.
I wake up every day and think, I wish we weren't governed by sociopaths, but yeah. Honestly, this is me, Deborah Francis White speaking, by the way, absolutely not amnesty, but how can they sleep?
I'd say on quite a nice mattress. I'd say they afford it. I'd say they invest a lot.
A mattress stuffed with money.
Yeah.
Gracie, how do you feel about this bill?
I mean, the bill is obviously awful. And as Belle says, it is the latest in a long line of really regressive measures from, you know, measures to undermine judicial review, water down the Human Rights Act, give immunity from prosecution to soldiers and spies. It's the latest in a long line of things this government has done to really just try and shield itself from scrutiny at whatever the cost. But I'm really heartened by the mobilisation that there has been. When you're, you know, I've worked in policy for the last 5 years or so. I spent a lot of time banging the drum about regressive legislation. And, you know, very often really dedicated activists pick it up and they'll mobilise. But you really rarely kind of see a movement take life on its own. You know, Sisters Uncut have done some really amazing work. And I think, yes, the government's trying to hide from scrutiny, but that's because it's running scared. It's because we have been successful in collectively and individually holding it to account. So, you know, for all that this bill is really, really abhorrent and it's an attack on protest and also an attack on marginalised communities, I'm also really heartened and really confident in our collective power, you know, to hold the government to account and to put forward, you know, our own vision for what we think safety looks like, what freedom looks like. So, disappointed, but never ground down.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where you're both shocked and completely unsurprised at the same time. But I just think there's too many people angry about this, and they're not, I really don't believe they're going to get it through in the form it's in without any modifications. And I really hope that's true. Patsy, so just to contextualise, you have been recently arrested at the vigil, and out of respect for Sarah Everett and her family, we won't talk about her. But can we talk to you about your experience at the vigil? You were arrested. I saw a picture of you on the ground with your arms behind your back. It did not seem like, I don't know what kind of reasonable force could ever be used at a vigil, but it certainly did not seem like anything anybody could call reasonable force. How do you feel about this policing bill?
Well, I mean, I feel like politically I'm quite new to all this, to be honest. But I do feel like learning more and more about it does feel like I'm in some weird dystopian movie or something, like a parallel universe where we have like all of our rights taken away from us by the government that was meant to sort of protect us. It just feels really odd, very bizarre. The last week's been bizarre, but this bill is just a bit mind-blowing.
Yeah, it really is. I'm Matilda Mallinson. You're an investigative journalist, and I asked you to put this panel together, which you have brilliantly done. How are you feeling about the policing bill, and what led you to put this particular panel together?
Well, I think one takeaway that has really stuck with me as a journalist from this whole saga is to do with the PR of a bill. This bill has been a lesson that the same policy can be sold to the public in radically different ways, and that we really need to be on our guard for political messaging when we assess these things. Because surprisingly, this bill wasn't supposed to be sold to us as, hey, Boris Johnson's taking a fat festering turd on all of your rights. It was supposed to come across as like a popular, we're tackling violent crime, we're protecting first responders. And I suspect that's why, maybe Bell will correct me, right up until the 11th hour, Keir Starmer was kind of whipping Labour MPs to abstain. And then just before the second reading in Parliament, that changed. And what changed it was this vigil and the fact that police completely overstepped their remit, and we got to see for ourselves the dangers that this bill could bring. And suddenly Labour started opposing it. And it wasn't just Labour, it was also the media. You know, the Telegraph before had been like, hey, Priti Patel's tackling the protests that damage democracy, we hate XR. And then after, the headline was the policing bill's an affront to liberty and Labour's right to oppose it. And so I think this vigil really changed the conversation we're having. And if we hadn't seen that police behaviour, attempts by groups like Liberty to alert us to the danger of this bill may have been drowned out by talk of tougher sentencing for terrorists and stuff. So I think that there's a lesson that we really need to judge a bill not by its best case scenarios, but by its worst. And the worst case scenario of this bill is that it really is going to pressurise police at protests already in volatile situations to intervene, if they're ever on the fence, to just intervene more quickly. And we'll see that happen. And it's going to damage the relationship between the people and the police. And that relationship is going to start to look more like the relationship you see in an authoritarian state than in a democratic state. And who will be at the head of that state is a scary question.
Mm. Well, exactly. And why does any prime minister want to open the door to that? Because even if your intentions are good, you don't know who's coming after you. So you never erode those things because you're opening the door to fascism. It's such a foolish thing to do. It's just short term. Well, I want more power right now. I don't want to be weighed down with it. So, you know, let's get rid of all these pesky rights. But you don't know who's coming after you. That's the best case scenario. Or you want to do very bad things. There's the only two scenarios. Either you're reckless or you've got ill intent.
I think Boris has both. Like, let's give him both. Like, why not both with Boris Johnson?
I mean, there is a greed there. There's an avarice there. Pell, how are you feeling about this with the Labour Party at the moment? How much can you say about where you're at with the Labour Party and the Labour Party's response to this? Do you think Labour are now actually against it? Do you think Keir Starmer's actually against this bill now?
I think definitely now, with the response from the public, I think they definitely felt that they couldn't be. This obviously changed, as you rightfully said, Alison, absolutely changed, and that's a good thing. Not going to complain about that, but I'm more concerned about now that it's past second reading, what we're going to do with it moving forward. So we're going to have the opportunity to make amendments and make changes and hopefully just keep up the pressure. I'm so pleased that after all of the actions of the public coming out against it, we've seen a delay. And I don't know what this delay means. This could mean that it doesn't come back in the current form it is, or it could mean basically it does, and they just bring it at another time where they think they're not going to have such a harsh reaction. But we need to look at what's going to be done to amend that bill. And I don't want to see any wishy-washy amendments coming from my side. We really need to take it apart. It's not fit for purpose as it is. And, you know, to be quite frank, I don't even think it's amendable. But if we're going to try, we have to have a proper try, not one that just looks showy for the public with no intent to make real change.
Which bits would you like to change in that bill? Like, what authority you have?
Well,
I know all of it, but
all of it. Well,
what would be your top line if they said it's down to you, you can make, three amendments or whatever, and then three it's going amendments. Through? I don't think it doesn't work like that. There are no genies in the House of Commons. But if if there was an amendment genie and you had three wishes, like, what's the biggest things for you in this bill? What are the biggest danger points?
Well, the additional powers given to the police, those need to be thrown out, so get rid of that. Mm. The criminalisation of literally being a Roman traveller person, that those absolutely need to be thrown out. And then last amendment for something to be put in, actually specific measures for tackling violence against women and girls. You know, the government kept saying, oh, all of these different things include measures that will eventually help tackle violence against women and girls. But there was nothing in there specifically. And I think given the scale of the problem, they actively need to address it, saying that, you know, these rules apply to everyone. And so it's going to affect everyone and everyone's going to be great after this, not good enough. So, yeah. All of those ridiculous measures about protests and giving people up to 10 years for a statue. All of these statues of men, by the way, worth much more than women, and putting in specific measures to tackle violence against women and girls.
I mean, Gracie, you're the interim director of Liberty. How optimistic are you that we can get this bill thrown out, or at least we can get meaningful amendments that stop them just having the power to go, you know, I feel like doing this. I don't need to put this through Parliament. Oh, well, let's give the police way more rights than they've already got to be brutal when they've clearly got enough. How optimistic are you that this won't go through, that we can change it?
So, I mean, the bill's passed its second reading, so it's going to become law in some form or other. What that form is absolutely all to play for. At committee stage, there's the opportunity to amend the bill, as Belle says. And to be honest, at that point, what we really want to see is what we call amendments to delete. So amendments to just get rid of the rubbish bits. We don't want tinkering around the edges. We don't want procedural tweaks. The bad bits just need to go. And it's not hard. They're kind of grouped together. Part three, part four, Liberty will write the amendments. People just need to pick them up and run with them. It's going to be as easy as people want it to be. There's just got to be the political will.
The Tories have got a majority. How will we convince enough Tory MPs to vote against it or to make sure those amendments go through?
So, look, you can do amendments at committee stage and report stage. MPs care about their constituents and what their constituents tell them. They care about public pressure. They care about media pressure. Those are the things that will move MPs. And obviously, we are going to need to keep the Labour front bench with us. We can't take that for granted. And we also need to move some Conservative backbenchers too. So it's going to be really important that those MPs hear from people in their constituencies about how they feel about this bill, why certain parts of it need to be deleted, why their constituents support these amendments. If there are demonstrations in their constituencies, they'll be listening to that. If there are organisations in their constituencies that are saying, look, actually, this is going to have a really big impact on people we work with or on, you know, what we do on a day-to-day basis, that's what will move MPs. So it really is a kind of kitchen sink, everybody muck in, because it's not enough for MPs just to hear from Liberty, as much as I wish it were. They've got to hear from their constituents. So it's really a case of everybody picking up the phone, turning up at the constituency surgery, sending an email, and doing that before committee stage and before report stage. That's what it's going to take.
Like a nice noisy protest then, like before they get it into law. They'll just...
I mean, protest out might be your last chance, is really the, you know. But like during COVID, though, Matilda, because you're a journalist across all of these issues, how do we protest safely during COVID? Before, I wonder if partly they're doing these things during COVID because it's a very difficult time for us to protest. And they're quickly, you know, Indiana Jones reaching back for the hat before the door slams, to use a Generation X reference. Young people, look it up. It's not my problem. So Matilda, like, what recommendations do you think you've got for us to make noise?
Well, you are definitely right that COVID has created this environment in which the government's had extra leeway to clamp down on dissent. And this bill is taking away the temporary coronavirus-dependent condition on which those powers currently hang. So in terms of making noise in a safe slash legal way, I think Gracie's really put her finger on it for us all, saying MPs don't just have to answer to their party whip, they also have to answer to their constituents. So make it politically not strategical for your MP to vote in favour of this bill. You know, tell your MP, we are not going to vote you back in. Give them something to care about in their language. If it is power that this government cares about, then tell them this is not a way to cling onto your power. I mean, there is a saying which Owen West, this police officer, said to me, and he said the fastest way to start a riot is to stop protest. So, yeah.
Well, that's exactly what happened, isn't
make
it?
Make them know that.
Mm. Well, this is the interesting thing about Bristol. With Black Lives Matter, the police were quite hands-off and said, you know, it's time for the statue to come down. This is significant and iconic. But then, you know, it's possible the Home Office came down on them so hard that when there were these recent protests in Bristol, the police felt, oh, we've got to be harsh. But the harshness then turns a, as you say, a protest into a riot, because you incense a crowd who've already come because they're angry about something. And yeah. So police tactics are important. Patsy, you know, you experienced this firsthand at the vigil. What happened to you? Do you feel safe talking about that?
I mean, I can't talk too much about it because obviously there is other stuff going on and I've got legal advice of I'm not allowed to say certain things, which is fun. I'm trying to, you know, navigate my way around wording things, but at the same time trying to highlight that I feel that, you know, okay, what happened to me was one thing, but I feel that women of colour have that on, you know, a daily basis and probably much worse, and that could have been a lot worse, you know. And I don't know, I think I was shocked at the time because I've never been in that position. I've never been in trouble with the police and things like that, but maybe that is just down to my white privilege. I'm not sure. Like, it just, yeah, it was shocking, but it was, there's so much around it that I hate that I can't say loads about it. But
yeah.
Can you speak in general terms about how unpredictable that escalation is? I don't know, like, did it go from being peaceful and feeling unthreatening to radically different? Or is that, you know, stepping into your legal no?
I think the only things that I can say is what I've said before. I know that it started as a vigil and I intended to go there with a candle. I had a candle with me. I'm going to a vigil. And that was it. And I was actually there only for about an hour, I think. I was arrested, but they took the cuffs off just outside Clapham Common. They actually didn't take the cuffs off. I slipped my hands out because, of course, handcuffs are made for men as well. So they're too small. Like, they're too big for my hands.
A little bit of female privilege there.
You know, I just slipped my hands out. But yeah,
not,
no.
Not my wrists. I've got significant wrists, so that wouldn't. But if you're a petite woman.
Yeah, I'm a feminist, so but now I'm very jealous of your wrists, Patsy.
I'm a feminist, but I'm
your hair colour.
This is another unreasonable body standard for women. Got to be able to slip out of cuffs in the 21st century.
Yeah, Patsy, I have to say, if I got arrested, I would not look. I would not be so, like, you looked really nice, I have to say, while being arrested.
Do you know what? I do want to talk about that, though. Like I understand a lot of people have said that. And I think one of the reasons maybe that I am in the media, and I'm just going by assumptions, but I feel like I fit a certain stereotype of that's palatable to the media. That, yes. You know, is like of average attractiveness, able-bodied, like, you know, white, you know, all of the certain things of a certain age, you know, that the media is just like, oh, look, she's the face of the media. And it's like, okay, great. Where's the rest of the women? Because it's like they've just put that one group out as like the white feminists. Okay, where's the rest of them? Because they all exist. And
that's totally true. It's so good that you've put that into words, because I think I've been like feeling stuff about it, but I never could quite like let myself think about it in that way. But yeah, it's really kind of refreshing to hear you say that. That's cool. Refreshing, wrong word. That's like a drink.
No, I know what you mean. It's good for us to acknowledge it and talk about it.
Yeah, yeah, it
and
is.
Can I come in on that? Because I went to the vigil as well, and I went knowing, A, how the police were potentially going to police it, having said that it shouldn't go ahead, but I knew that people were going to gather anyway. Mm. And I also went knowing that Black people have faced massively disproportionate COVID lockdown fines. So I went with my boyfriend's phone number on my arm, a solicitor's phone number on my arm, spare clothes, medication, spare food in the event I got kettled, gave my boyfriend three numbers for where I was going to be, and I got shouted out by the police. My white friend didn't get shouted out by the police. So even there, there was disproportionality. There was different treatment.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Did you see the hostility, Gracie, come from the police? And we should just quickly contextualise this. From what I know, Reclaim Our Streets tried to get it done legally and safely, say it's a vigil. We're not going to be shouting. We're going to be standing 2 feet apart. We're going to be standing there quietly with candles. I think the local police said yes and the Met police said no.
No, yeah, well, the local police were planning, putting together the police plan for them. And then Scotland Yard said no. And the local police communicated that because Scotland Yard are their bosses.
But that was a bad call. To say
no. Yeah.
Well, interestingly, and I don't know, Gracie or Belle, if you have insight into this, the police officer I spoke to earlier, he said with conviction that Priti Patel was pressurising Scotland Yard to say no. And he also said he strongly suspects, and so do many other police, that then the reason Cressida Dick's resignation was being called for was kind of revenge from the Home Office because they'd actually faced resistance from the police when they told them not to let the vigil go ahead. Don't know if anyone has insight into that. I'd just be keen to get your response.
I mean, it's a hot potato. I've seen the briefing to The Guardian that the police have said, actually, Priti Patel was saying, don't let people gather. I think that that would be consistent with her previous statements on protest in the context of lockdown. But I can also see that neither of them wants to be caught holding the baby on this one. And actually, the reality is that there were operational decisions that were made by the police. And there was also a failure, not just by the Home Secretary, but by Parliament more broadly, to just have an explicit exemption in the regulations so that we weren't in this mess anyway.
Yeah, but they couldn't have that explicit exemption because they had to allow too many different things to take place, like grouse shooting and other group activities, which is why we didn't have this explicit exemption. But you know, the local police understood they wanted to distance themselves from, and again, I can't talk about this too much. Obviously, there are sensitivities with the case in terms of who is the suspected murderer. Mm-hmm. And because of that, they wanted to distance themselves from that individual. So they're wanting to do whatever Reclaim These Streets felt would help make women in the area feel better. And around the time of the appeal for Sarah, loads of women came forward to report historic things that happened in the past couple of months.
Yeah.
So there was a feeling in the area, just generally a fear. And, you know, they actively put extra police women out on the streets. There were no patrols where there was just a policeman. They would have one male officer, one female officer on these patrols just to make people feel more comfortable. And the council, they put out all these extra lights, which weren't switched on in the end. Gracie, as you know, you were there. You see, it got very dark on the common. And there were COVID marshals ready and willing. So, and we told them, the local MPs, myself, because it was my constituency, and the MPs in the surrounding area said, you can't shut it down now because you've let it be advertised and people are going to come anyway. And they did. Yeah. Even the Duchess of Cambridge came. She came along. She put down her flowers. Everything was quiet and calm. But it descended into what we saw because they just didn't allow women to have their voices heard. And the explanation I got from the officer in charge, once I saw the trouble, I went back down because I was there earlier as well. And the explanation I got from the officer in charge was, well, you see, they started giving left-wing speeches.
Oh,
and
oh,
these people giving left-wing
no.
speeches. And I had one of my staff members with me and she was laughing afterwards. She said he didn't read his brief, did he?
Oh, he obviously wasn't a local officer. Part. You don't say that out loud, mate. That's the thing you say inside your head and to your friends behind closed doors. Don't say that out loud.
You know, they got up and they started to give these left-wing speeches and, you know, that's protesting and saying these terrible things about the police. So we had to come in and stop it because, you know, we're not allowed to protest. And I said to him, you know, some people would consider me left-wing. And he was like, oh, well, you know what I mean. You know, there were some characters that were intent on you know, causing trouble. And
it doesn't matter if they're anarchists, which some yeah. of them were. It's a democracy. It's
apparently.
We can't all be the Duchess of Cambridge. Like, we can't,
but the Duchess
you know.
Of Cambridge was fucking there. And if you're an international listener, that's Kate Middleton.
Yeah.
I don't want to patronise you. You may know that, but I don't expect you to know it. Why would you? Unless you're in a Commonwealth country, in which case I have patronised you and I apologise.
Yeah. I feel very strange as an Irish woman going, the Duchess of Cambridge. Like, that should never be said in my accent. Like, let's.
But the Duchess of Cambridge, Kate Middleton, was there. And then someone, but also, women were there. And look, they can't have expected no anti-police sentiment. The victim of this horrendous crime was killed by an off-duty police officer.
I feel like we're constantly being told, I feel like horrific stuff happens all the time and we're just being told to shut up about it all the time.
It's gaslighting.
And it really feels, yeah.
We're not safe. Women aren't safe. We have to be able to gather and say we don't feel safe and this is one of our own. We have to be able to do that.
But even when we talk about it on Twitter, we get told, why don't you think about men's feelings? I found it so difficult over the past. I thought it was the vigil was such a beautiful idea and such a great thing to do for people to, get their feelings out, to physically be there and to kind of, be with each other. Because I found that whole week on Twitter, I feel like I nearly had a mental breakdown and I'm not even over exaggerating. I feel like this past month has been very bad for a lot of people's mental health and I feel like we're just never given, and I'm sorry to make it about me, but I just feel like you express emotions about something that affects you in your daily life and you get told constantly to shut up about it. And I think that's the hardest thing about being a woman for me is just that kind of take your, it's the hardest thing about being anything, but it's just a yeah, I know what's happening, but shut up about it. And this bill feels like that. This bill feels like, yeah, I this will affect your right to protest, but you can shut up about it because we're going to put it through. It's on the second reading and it feels, yeah, sorry to go back, I totally overtook this conversation.
No,
go, what
your
about
personal
my
emotion is what makes the Guilty Feminist different from Woman's Hour. It's true. Not love, bless you, Women's Hour, but that's what this space is for. Belle, how optimistic do you feel? And as an MP, do you think this is true? Because we're always told this, or will MPs have to care? But if as a Tory MP and a Labour constituent, you know, a clearly lefty constituent writes and goes, I won't vote for you again, they know that they didn't vote for them in the first place. How do we really get into the head of an MP who might be an on-the-fence Tory about this bill? Do you see what I mean? There must be some Tories concerned about it. What can we do? Can please give us anything we can do?
I have a plan. Make an email with a double barrel surname in it. Just make up a new email
nice.
With Camilla Von, I don't know.
What about Grouse Huntington?
Or Duchess of Cambridge, like just an email from her.
It's not the official advice of the Guilty Feminist to impersonate the Duchess of Cambridge, just to be extremely clear.
I'm sorry, Belle, you got a double barrel surname.
No. People think that double barrel surnames are so posh, but actually I have a double barrel surname because my grandparents weren't married. Which was cheeky back then.
I'm like that about like Frère Rochers. I think they're posh and other people think they're very gauche. Like, I have no concept of what's posh. But sorry, Belle.
Go, Belle. Alison, you're skipping right over the fact that I'm Deborah Frances White. Like, I'm not even here.
Oh yeah.
It's a stage name. Don't worry about it. Belle, what can we do? I need your real, this is not your MP advice, your real advice. Pretend no one's listening. We'll cut it out if you regret what you say.
For most MPs, it's about volume. And it's about, like you said, who it is that's coming back at them. So Gracie was talking about people emailing into their MP, making their voices heard in their numbers that they're against this bill, but also special interest groups. Think about who it is that influences that particular MP. And I'm going to use an example because we're talking about conservatives mostly that has to do with money. But an example of certain drugs for different things. So pharmaceutical companies, in the case of making sure that South Africa were able to get more HIV drugs a few years back, they were targeted quite heavily. The shareholders were targeted quite heavily, and their shareholders, you know, the shareholders of the company spoke to the companies and were like, we don't want to be part of this. This makes us look really bad. So look at what interest groups are involved, I think.
Okay.
What interest groups influence certain individuals.
So actually we do need the Countryside Alliance and people like that
a noise. If the Countryside Alliance were really alarmed by a particular issue, I think there are some individuals in Parliament that might listen more than they would do to perhaps 100.
I know they're not my natural bedfellows, but this is the erosion of our democracy in such a significant way. If anyone's listening and knows anyone in the Countryside Alliance, or is in fact themselves in the Countryside Alliance, I'm not sure we've got a huge crossover for the Guilty Feminist, but like, I'm just saying there must be somebody.
That's the guilty part of their feminism.
I mean, maybe.
The killing of sentient beings.
Like, maybe, just... but look, you know, I don't always not eat meat. So if you know anybody who's in a group that might want to protest that Tories might listen to, we need to be strategic, gang. We need to be strategic. Gracie, what's your advice here? How can we help Liberty make sure that this has meaningful amendments?
So Liberty is a really democratic organisation and we're a membership organisation. So I'd say just join Liberty, number one. It's like £1 a month. Come and help us set our policy and do our campaigning. We've been around since 1934 and, you know, Liberty will probably outlast all of us. So come and be a member. But second, it really is hammer your MP. And figure out how you speak to everyone you know. Figure out what's going to make your grandma care about it. What's going to make your uncle care about it? What's going to make your local shopkeeper care about it? Like, we have to have conversations with people in our communities and figure out, you know, creative ways to mobilize against the bill. But the other thing that I would say is that, you know, as a lot of the grassroots groups, and especially Sisters Uncut, are saying, this is bigger than this bill. You know, a movement will come out of this that is bigger than and lasts longer than this bill. And I think it's a really, really important opportunity, you know, for everyone, you know, who saw what happened at Clapham Common and that was new. I'm glad that was new to some people, right? So now let's have a look at the experiences of people for whom it's not new. And let's think, okay, well, how do we come together and work in solidarity with one another? Because this bill isn't just about protest. It is about Roma people. It's about travellers. It's about anyone with a nomadic way of life. It's about people who are disproportionately likely to be stopped and searched and targeted by gangs policing. It's an attack on everyone. So I really think it's building those links of solidarity and maybe listening to voices that we haven't listened to before, because we know that, you know, we've had a nurse fined for organising a protest, fined 10 grand in the pandemic. We've had asylum seekers fined for protesting at Napier Barracks. We've had the Stansted 15 charged with anti-terror laws, the Met unlawfully banning Extinction Rebellion protests. The government's been coming for everyone for quite a while. So I think, you know, in addition to hammering your MP, you know, let's think about the movement that we build out of this for the long term. And please join Liberty.
Gracie, is Liberty X called Liberty X because Liberty existed before that? Because I remember they were called Liberty. I just want to know if you're responsible for the naming of Liberty X.
Did you chase down a pop band and go, you need to put an X on the end of that or you're toast?
No, I mean, we still get quite a few applications for people who want to work with fabrics. So, it wasn't us.
And you're like, the fabric of society.
Yes. Come and work with a more important textile. The silky feel of the human race. And we find Liberty on Twitter at?
At Liberty HQ.
At Liberty HQ. And is that the same website, libertyhq.com?
It is not. It's libertyhumanrights.org.uk.
Could I say, please also join Amnesty International if you are not currently a member. And there is a specific action, which I will read out separately at the end, where you can go now to join Amnesty's voice against the policing bill. Matilda Mallinson, what do you want us to know or do or feel?
If we are all feeling stressed about these rights being taken away from us, think about the people who never had these rights or whose rights are already being curtailed in this way. I'm thinking about asylum seekers, for example. You know, I don't know if people know about the situation in Napier Barracks, but you had people being held in really unsafe, unhygienic, trauma-inducing conditions. And when they went out on their daily walk, two of them took a protest banner saying, you know, please don't treat us this way. And the government used the coronavirus rules saying, well, if you're carrying a protest banner, then that's not daily exercise. That's a protest. That's illegal. I mean, Patsy's like been really self-aware here of how privileged she was to not expect to be treated that way. And I think right now we're all feeling a fear that some of us haven't felt before. So yeah, so think about the people who already felt that fear before this bill.
Patsy, is there anything you came to say that you didn't get to say or you'd like us to think about or do?
Yeah, I mean, to touch on that, it's the whole privilege thing. You know, I was able, because of my white privilege, to take that risk of being on the bandstand and like near police that close. And you know, like Gracie said, she wrote down numbers, she was prepared with food and all sorts of different things. That never entered my mind because it didn't need to. And that's the difference that we're seeing, do you know what I mean? And I think that's not showed in mainstream media. And the reason that I saw the Sarah Everard case and, you know, resonated with it was because that's all I had seen. I hadn't seen anything else. There hadn't been any other women on the news, and it never is shown.
There are so many black and brown women who go missing.
There are.
And that crimes go unsolved or unnoticed, unbroadcast, and that has to change. That has to change.
It does, but I think as well, like, the way that me and my friends talk, or the way that, you know, we've been brought up and we view the world is very, very different. And I see it as a privilege to be able to educate myself on the experiences of women of colour rather than having to experience them. That's such a different, you know, it should be a talking point, I think, in this, because we talk about women's rights and things like that. And I did actually do an article recently about the suffragettes. And I don't think a lot of people understood what I meant, because I said from the suffragettes, not a lot has changed. And I just meant because the suffragettes didn't actually seem to look into black women's rights. It was very much about white women's rights to vote. And a lot of black women were fighting very hard for their right to vote and other things that were going on. So I just think it's just not talked about. And especially within white groups of people, they're just not talking about this, and it should be spoken about, you know.
Well, I'm sorry you had such a horrible experience, and thank you for your clarification around your privilege within it. But I also think it is awful. You know, what happened to you was really awful, and I'm sorry, and I hope that if there's any legalities that come after this for you, that you're okay. And I hope you're just okay as a person as well, because I know also when you become the center of something like this, it can be awful to be on Twitter as well. Belle, is there anything you've come to say or that you want us to do?
Well, I was just thinking about what Patsy said, actually. And just a very quick point that, because it is a feminist podcast, that feminism can't be selective. It just can't be selective. And for too many years, it's gone like that. It has to be intersectional. It has to recognise that actually, if it's a global movement, the majority of the women in the world are actually black or brown. So it's not a global movement. It's not a movement in its literal term that says that it stands for all women if it doesn't look at issues of racism.
Yeah. And this policing bill is really going to be on the attack. So we absolutely need now to be vigilant. And if we have privilege, we need to use it. Is it true that they are saying that you could get 10 years in jail for defacing a statue and therefore you could get more years in jail for pulling down a statue than hurting a real woman?
Absolutely. You could get up to 10 years for defacing a statue.
10 years for defacing a statue of a man?
Yeah.
When men often walk away, hurt a woman and walk away absolutely without anything at all.
Yeah. And I think it was Afua Hirsch. I'm trying to remember exactly how she put it, but she put it brilliantly. She said, for every woman that stopped from protesting, we should put down a statue of a woman. And she can silently protest because that's the only way.
I saw that field of statues of women they can't touch them.
Yeah.
But you can't trust people with women's statues. Like, it would just be a lot of like disembodied boobs and stuff. Like, I've seen some statues that are like quietly protesting.
Look, I hope very strongly that we can do something about this, but I know that it won't happen without action. Please join Liberty. Please join Amnesty. Please badger your MP until they're sick of you, but also see who you can mobilise, because that's an interesting point, because I was thinking, well, my MP is Keir Starmer. So, I mean, one hopes that now he said, oh, no, I'm anti the policing bill. What can I do? Like, keep writing to Keir Starmer. But actually, the thing to do is to mobilise as many other people in as many other communities as possible. It's a numbers game.
And as many other interest groups.
Special interest groups, yes. Countryside Alliance and similar. Which special interest groups might the Tories listen to? Is actually a really good question to be strategic. I want to thank all of our guests today. And a word on Patsy Stevenson. She's a young woman, still a student, just starting to become politicised. And she's had a lot of flack on Twitter because she wrote an article that got heavily edited. So could you please be kind? She's trying really hard. She's acknowledging her privilege. She did have a very horrible, violent thing happen to her. And she's on our team. So I was very happy to have her on the podcast today and support her at what's a really difficult time for her. Now, one of our panelists today is an investigative journalist, Matilda Mallinson, and she pointed out we needed to get a right of reply here. Now, obviously, Priti Patel is probably too busy to do a feminist podcast, but I took Matilda's point of view on board because I actually want to fix this. I want to change this. So we absolutely need to do the work to find out what somebody on the other side of this might be saying and thinking. So she went and interviewed retired Chief Superintendent Owen West. Now, like all of our guests and all of our comedians and everyone we have on, the views of Owen West are not necessarily those of the guilty feminist, but I think you'll find what he has to say extremely interesting and very, very useful for when you're thinking about how to speak to your MPs and the people who have power to change this. If you think you might be triggered by this, then you can skip over it. It's about 7.5 minutes long. But if you can listen to it, I really, really would. I think it's very, very useful. Over to Matilda Mallinson and Owen West.
Owen, thank you for joining us. So I thought, as someone who has experienced policing protests, maybe you could help us to understand what this bill is all about.
Let me take you back, believe it or not, all the way to 1895. And Gustave Le Bon wrote a seminal book back then called The Crowd. And essentially what that book says is that crowds are a threat to the state, they are a threat to property, threat to the landed class, mad, bad and dangerous to know. That view of the crowd sticks certainly in the British psyche right the way up, I would argue, until around 2009. And in 2009, there was a tragedy when Mr. Ian Tomlinson died at the hands of the police at the G20 summit down in London. Mr. Tomlinson was not a protester. He was not involved in any way with the public order. And a police officer struck him with a baton on the leg and then pushed him, and Mr. Tomlinson fell over and he died later on. And quite rightly, there was a national outcry in relation to the way that that protest had been handled and Mr. Tomlinson's death. Now, that outcry launched a report by the police watchdog. And what it does is it absolutely destroys a lot of the stuff that Le Bon was saying. And essentially, since 2009, the police in the UK have adopted a very human rights-based approach. We've had this view that protest is a fundamental right in a democracy, and it is the police job to facilitate and make that happen. This goes really well until we get to Black Lives Matter and Extinction Rebellion. And at this time, we start to see from the state, from the government, and from what I would call the right-wing commentary, a pushback about those protests. And the pushback is characterised as, this is the police being soft, this is the police losing control, and that's when you get this draconian measures that are being brought into the new Policing, Crime Sentencing and Courts Bill, which is around people's right to protest in a democracy.
But the government has said police are asking for these powers, that police have submitted a report saying current guidance isn't good enough, modern protest has changed too much, and we need more powers to cope.
Yeah, just on the police have called for this. This is a really interesting narrative that's coming from government. And if you read the HMRC report, as I have done many times, it actually says that police opinion on new powers is divided. Some officers think it's draconian. Some officers think it's a step too far. Some officers worry about the long-term consequences for police legitimacy. So it's fair to say police opinion is very much divided on this, and there are those out there that genuinely worry about it. I don't see at all that the police are jumping up and down and asking for new powers, which by their definition are going to increase the likelihood of conflict between police and protesters going forward.
So as a former police officer, you don't feel these extra powers are necessary, is that right?
I would argue there is nothing wrong with the seminal report that was done in 2009. Sadly, awfully, tragically, it took someone to die before you took notice of the science that was there. Let's not have a position where the latest thinking about crowds gets us into a position where somebody else dies, or where a police officer dies, because you know, there'll be another knee jerk then, and we'll go all the way back to 2009 and reinvent the wheel again.
Evidently, something does need to change. So what is that?
Well, there's a few things that need to be done. And first of all, I turn to the police rather than the government. The police need to recentre themselves on their values, on what it means to police in a democracy. And to stand up for their operational independence much more than they currently are doing. Operational independence, I think, is being eroded. And what I say to senior officers and to my colleagues is, you know, governments come and go. The relationship between the police and the people they serve, that's the relationship we ought to be prioritising, they ought to be thinking about. And just stand up a little bit more to the political direction that they're being dragged in. If, you know, there's a well-known saying out there, which is the quickest way to start a riot is to ban protest.
So police really should be looking at crowds in a very different way than this bill encourages them to. Now, I expect our listeners are probably more likely to be on the crowd side of the police line. So what would you say to them about how they should look at police, particularly in protest situations?
So if you are looking at a police line, if you're on a protest and you're looking at a police line, I'd ask people to just remember that it's well over a quarter of the front line on earlies, lates and nights working the streets of the UK at the moment has less than 2 years service. They are very, very inexperienced. It might be the first time they've had to mobilise and deal with potential violence. The vast majority of them don't want to be there. And there is a crisis out there of a huge number of officers that are declining to be trained in public order tactics. There's also a concern and anxiety out there as well about where social media is, you know, them being identified. And then you've got details of their family life. They may just be standing there, but someone's filming them, their collar number's there. long-winded, but I just think of it from the other perspective, which is if they could be doing anything else, I think they'd rather not do the shift than have to take the overtime.
I think for some people it might be more difficult to see things that way, because certain communities, you know, are systemically over-policed and treated with unfair aggression. Do you see diversity as a critical issue when it comes to policing crowds?
I do, and it is. There is, to be fair to policing, there is a huge amount of work and emphasis and worry actually, that the police is not recruiting enough people from a diverse background. I'm talking all types of diversity there. What the police are not understanding, in my view, is the diversity element and wanting to bring people in absolutely is intrinsically linked to the way the police do their job. So if you do stop search in an aggressive manner, if you do stop search in an insensitive manner, don't be surprised if people from those communities don't want to join. If you police a vigil in an excessively aggressive manner, if you trample on people's rights, don't be surprised if people don't want to join. You know, what does policing look like out there on the streets? And if you're starting to get that right, then more people might look to you as something that they want to join. Get it wrong, and, you know, no surprise that no one wants to get involved.
This has been eye-opening. Thank you so much, Owen, for joining us.
Thank you.
Grace Petrie is a protest singer. So quite soon might be illegal under the policing
That's
bill.
That's true. Yeah, blimey, I'll be on the lam.
Noisy.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you thought about retraining in cybersecurity? I saw some posters that
I haven't thought about that, but I think there's more chance of me becoming a ballet dancer, I think, to be honest. That's a callback.
Callback to a poster campaign in Britain. It's too much to unpack.
It really is. We've got bigger fish to fry. They're taking away our right to protest.
Yeah. Grace, do you have a song?
I do. I have a song. I have a song that I wrote. I either finished writing it 5 minutes before we started recording, or I haven't finished it, and we're about to find out which. It's been such a privilege to be a part of this conversation tonight, and such an education. I have been writing protest songs for about 12 years. And I think, you know, to be honest with you, I, like a lot of people, felt really burnt out after the 2019 election. And I think that I had a similar experience to you, Alison, where that whole week of the reporting around the case and the kind of outpouring on Twitter of women's stories felt like it just felt like this kind of wall of pain and trauma. And I found it, and I found it really, really, really difficult. And then I was at home alone. I live in Leicester, and I was just watching the protest unfold on Twitter, and I found the whole thing so heartbreaking and so alarming. And then I think, you know, I kind of really realized that, and this is something that I have realized over and over and over again in my adult life and in my political life, but it's the fact that you can't give up when you feel like you're not winning. Because at the end of the day, I think what Gracie said about this is like, this is a bigger movement than this bill. And actually all of the things that we're fighting for, everybody who listens to this podcast, everybody who considers themselves a feminist, certainly, and everybody considers themselves fighting for a better world, I think we all have a really hard truth to come to terms with, which is like, this has to be bigger than our individual spirit. Because I think the point is that we might not win some of these battles in our lifetime, but that doesn't mean that it's not worth fighting. This sounds like a really depressing note to leave it on.
No,
but
weirdly, that's what Ollie from Amnesty said today. He said, He said two things. One is, I said, how easy will this be to, you know, get rid of this bill or make amendments? He said, hard. He said, but every single victory or partial victory I've ever had has been from a complete non-starter. Like, you think you can't win this, but like, we'll have a go.
Yeah.
And he also said there are some things we've won that have taken 20 years. You know, when you look at the course of history, you know, sometimes you're two steps forward and one step back. So you're right, Grace. This is a long game project. This isn't, you know, and I like to know what we can do by Wednesday week, but this might be one we're fighting for a long time.
It's all a long game project, you know, and I think it's,
I was thinking about the idea of when they were first building cathedrals and the people who put down the first bricks would die before the finished thing would be fully erected. In some ways, I have to, in order to sort of like keep engaged, because apathy is so easy. I know apathy is so easy, and it's so, I found it so easy to be like, I campaigned so hard for Labour and it all went so wrong, and now I'm just going to take my ball and go home. And actually, that is not, that is a fucking privileged attitude, and it's one that I don't have a right to when these sorts of fundamental things are being taken away. So for everybody who just got engaged over the past week, that's amazing, brilliant, welcome to the team. And for everybody who, like me, who'd sort of quit the team and fucking have a word with yourselves and come back, because it's never been more important than it is now. Do you know what I mean? So I kind of wrote a song trying to say some of that.
What's the song called?
Well, again, it sounds quite depressing. It's called The Losing Side. But I hope it'll come to...
God, I love you, Grace.
I hope I hope it might cheer some of you anyway.
As a West Bromwich Albion fan, I think I'll be feeling this.
Cool.
I'll be
like, I'm a tough old kind of gal.
Okay. So we'll give it a go, shall we, Benji? Okay. Common grief to Bristol up in flames. We came here begging justice, and instead we got the blame for peace disturbed out on the streets tonight. And watching on the BBC, you know something's not right when mourners come with candles and with flowers. Wrestled 3-on-1 and pinned down by the state's full powers. This is their world, and these have been the rules. But we have come to break it down with bloody fingernails for tools. This threat of violence, this tightrope wire, we can no longer bear it. We are all too fucking tired. No minute silence, we will sing higher. Don't tell us to light a candle when we have come to start a fire. And if I spend my life on the losing side, you can lay me down knowing that I tried. There's a better world, and on a quiet day, when I hold my breath, I can hear her say she's on her way. She's on her way. It's safe at home, you watch it on TV, and never think that one day you could be the enemy, that you might one day be under attack from all that should protect you, hoping someone has your back. The history books are screaming from the shelves. No government who outlaws speaking to defend ourselves has good things planned. A storm ahead I see, and not one of us can bear it without solidarity. Oh, I see trouble all my days. This ailing, failing world sent signs of fire and blood and plague. But from the rubble, from the raised, the mightiest cathedral, from these ashes we will raise. And if I spend my life on the losing side, you can lay me down knowing that I tried. There's a better world, and on a quiet day, when I hold my breath, I can hear her say she's on her way. She's on her way to take up my sisters. This fire will never die. To take up my comrades, no one left behind. And if I spend lay me down, knowing that I tried. There's a better world, and on a quiet day, when I hold my breath, I can hear her say she's on her way.
Thank you very much.
You've done it again, Grace. You've done it again.
Thank you very much.
I was crying, as I nearly always do when I hear a new song of yours, and I looked across and I saw Selinsky's crying at the other end of the table too. yeah, you got some tears out of Selinsky there, and he's a much harder sell than me.
I don't know. He's cried at some of the quality of recordings I've sent him, to be honest.
That was immense, and that chorus I think is iconic and very much sometimes how I feel, like, you know, you've got to try, you've got to keep trying, and nothing's been changed by people that didn't try. That's all I know.
Absolutely.
And it's only, you know, it's only moments of effort and joy. And I remember once supporting a refugee family, and I said, look, I really don't know if I'm going to be able to do anything here. And he said, I remember the father saying to me, trying is enough. And I just thought, somebody's out there trying for me. If somebody's trying, I can keep going, because somebody's trying. If nobody's trying for me, then I can't, you know. So that sentiment is a wonderful one, and thank you very much.
Can I just say something else really quickly? I meant to say before, you can cut this out if you want. But I think, like, obviously Labour changed their position on this bill, but I think, you know, like, that is such an immense moment for us to realise that, like, mm-hmm. you know, I think that idea about pressure, like, maybe, like, this Labour Party is, everybody knows my ideal Labour Party was the one of the last leadership, but, like, I think that there's a real lesson here for people like me to be like, you know, some politicians, as Tony Benn said, are weather vanes. So what that means is that we've got to change the direction of the weather. Do you know what I mean? If we can change the way the wind is blowing, then, like, there are so many things that we need to make popular policies. That's what I've realised, I think, this week, is, like, we can change the hearts and minds of people who are going to vote in the next election. And that is how we get people to, like, stand for the things that matter to us. Instead of doing what I've been doing, is sitting home being like, oh, this, you know, like, these parties aren't offering what I hope for. Do you know what I mean? I think it's not a spectator sport. I think we've got to get involved more than I have been lately.
Also, we need to stand together and not tear each other down. I think that music, protest music, is good for that sentiment. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we tend to be our own worst enemies when we're fighting these fights, and we need to do it together.
Absolutely. And I think, finding people who, like we were said so much this time, like, who wouldn't be our, like, natural allies. You know, I think, like, these are common issues, and so much of the things that we want to see change about this country really are common issues. And there's got to be ways to put it into more like a productive language, where we're like, so much of the time we're not talking to people who don't agree with us anymore. And I think we've got to stop that trend, because otherwise we're just going to keep losing, you know.
Totally. Patsy, are you okay? Were you moved by that song?
Yeah, no, I cried a bit. Yeah. Yeah, of course. No, because, like, you know, it is emotional, and I try not to cry about it too much, as in a sense, like, when I was arrested, I tried not to cry or anything, tried holding my head up and stuff like that, because I knew it was like, it's that scene of, like, if you're sort of crying, it's seen as, like, weakness or something. But I guess, you know, that's not really a thing.
I've just been watching Brené Brown, and she says vulnerability is courage, and I'm really seduced by that. I'm fully Brené Brown at the moment. Tears aren't weakness.
I also just going to say that I, like, cried my eyes out that night looking at pictures of you being arrested, Patsy. So I feel like if I made you cry, then, like, I've got you back, because you made me cry.
You have been listening to The Guilty Feminist with me, Deborah Francis-White, guest co-host Alison Spittle, and our very special guests, Belle Ribeiro-Addy, Gracie Mae Bradley, Patsy Stevenson, and Matilda Mallison, with music from Grace Petrie and Froki Ben. The Guilty Feminist theme tune was composed by Mark Hodge and produced by Nick Sheldon. The producer is Tom Selitsky from the Spontaneity Shop. Thanks to Rachel Croft, Regina DiCio, and everyone for listening. For more information about this and other episodes, visit guiltyfeminist.com.
But even, like, feminism has men in it.
Feminism.
Oh, balls! No, I'm just like, sorry. I'm that patriarchal that I've just misspelt feminism to put men into it. Which is like a comedy night, isn't it?
I mean, I have seen people spell it that way, actually, accidentally. It's a frequent typo.
Oh, thank you, Deborah. You're so nice to me.
Oh, no, that's true. I have.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Hello? Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.